You are Locked On Suns, your daily Phoenix Suns podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back into the latest episode of Locked On Phoenix Suns. I'm your host, Brendan Kleen. We are part of the Locked On Podcast Network. You can follow us at Locked On PHX Suns. You can follow me, if you're so inclined, over at BrendanKleen14. Thank you for listening. We are happy to have you. Crazy week of Suns basketball. Crazy weekend of free agency across the NBA. I hit on some of it solo yesterday, going through the Jay Crowder signing and some of the other bits of business that the Suns did, and maybe a little bit of what came next. And shortly after I published that, Dario Saric came back to the Suns, as we all expected. So to break down that signing, to break down now that we really have a firm idea of this rotation, and a little bit of, you know, like, what does this team really have in it? I brought on Gerald Bourguet, a frequent guest for us here, and somebody who covers the Suns over at FanSided, and has been around this team since the ugly days, just like the rest of us have. I know a lot of listeners feel that as well. Just excitement to get to cover and watch and consume a team that is good for the first time in a very long time. What do you? How are you like wrapping your head around that, Gerald? We actually get to like watch a good team night in and night out.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still trying to wrap my head around it, honestly, because when I first started covering Suns games live, it was right after they shipped out Goran Dragic and brought in Brandon Knight, and it has been all straight downhill since then. So it's nice to be like going into
a new
season.
So we have you to blame, is what you're saying.
Pretty much. I'm a bad luck charm. It's like me and Dave King, because I think he came he came at a horrible time too. Yep. But yeah, no, it's nice to go into a new season and like have actual positional battles to talk about and depth and legitimate NBA players. It's wild.
It is. And the Suns actually have done a really good job filling out the back of their roster. Not that that's like the most sexy thing for an NBA team to do, but it does matter. You know, when you've seen things at the back of the roster just be so ugly for so long, you know, you think about injuries, the fact that Chris Paul is older, and all the rest. I think they've done some good stuff that I didn't get to hit on in yesterday's show. But the biggest thing, like I said, is this Dario Saric deal, which was announced, reported at least, has not been announced officially by the team, reported early this morning by Woj, 3-year, $27 million contract, which I really think for both sides is probably pretty good. I predicted the Suns would get him back at around 10 to 12, just because I think that's what, like, a tier below starter level players tend to get in the NBA. But again, he didn't have much of a market left around the league in restricted free agency, especially once Atlanta gave their last remaining cap space to Bogdanović. Not that I think Saric was going to go to Atlanta, but there's really no more leverage you have at that point. And he came back on a deal that's very team friendly, still pretty tradable and team friendly at about $9 million annually. So what did you make of the contract, Gerald? And you know, I think it was fairly expected, but just the fact that we, you know, the culmination of a type of relationship or journey, whatever you want to call it, between Saric and the Suns that started all the way back on draft night last year.
Yeah, I mean, I actually really liked the deal for both sides as well. I thought, you know, getting him for a price around that mid-level exception, it's not the mid-level exception, obviously, but for a price around that range is pretty good, especially with the way that Saric was able to play in the bubble. And I know that like we don't want to dig too deep and put too much weight in an 8-game sample size, but you know, we have been saying, a lot of us at least, that Saric was best for this team when he was coming off the bench in like that backup five role as a small ball five. And I thought he did a really nice job of that in the bubble with Aaron Baines out. You know, he put up like almost 15 points a game. He shot lights out. He shot above 50% from three, obviously, again, super small sample size. But I really liked this deal for the Suns, especially as a guy who, you know, this is kind of one of the common themes of this roster that James Jones has put together, is that positional versatility. He can play the four. He can play the five. Monty Williams is going to have a lot of freedom with his lineups based on, you know, specific matchups, because he's got guys like Šarić that can shoot, that can play multiple positions, that can make plays for others. It's just a very versatile group with a lot of different skill sets. So, you know, bringing Šarić back was pretty much the feather in his cap to, you know, cap off this really good offseason that James Jones had.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. I mean, we saw, especially in an offseason where we saw so many restricted free agents get overpaid, and that happens, like, you know, that's kind of the point of restricted free agency in some ways, is to make it hard for teams to go get players from opposing teams, at least. And then it seems like agents always tend to have the upper hand in terms of using leverage that might not even really be there, with cap space out on the market and things like Malik Beasley is the example I keep thinking about this offseason, where Minnesota basically trades for him at the deadline last year, and sort of it seems like they decided all the way back then that they were going to give him a contract like this. And no matter really the fact that there was no market or really spending money to go around with him, he ended up back in Minnesota on a $15 million a year deal, when I don't even know if he's a better player than Šarić, or at least it's debatable, and he's making twice as much. So I think just when you think about it that way, the Suns did a really good job here. I think Šarić, at least compared to Minnesota, really liked Phoenix. And I think he gets along really well with Monty Williams. I was listening back to a practice recording of when he was out of the rotation back in January. And, you know, obviously not an easy situation to be in a contract year and in a new city for the third time in three seasons, but was able to keep his head on straight. I think he really, the respect that he has for Monty, I think, allowed him to be more comfortable going in and out of the rotation the way that he was. I think Monty always knew that he was going to come back into the rotation, and then, you know, come bubble time, there he is, and making a really, really big impact. You know, scored double digits every single bubble game, and was really the fulcrum of the second unit offense. With that said, we're going to get into the full rotation in the next segment, but just when it comes to Šarić, what type of role do you think he's going to be playing on this team?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, because there are a couple of different ways that Monty could go. You know, he could continue with the dual wing lineup, which I think that he should, especially now that they just got Jay Crowder, who is built like a brick house. Like, that guy can definitely play the stretch four role. And you want to keep Mikal Bridges in the starting lineup. You know, he could play as a four coming off the bench, or he could be Ayton's main backup. You know, Damian Jones is a guy that's athletic and can rim run, but he's not, you know, we don't know. He's not a known commodity at this point. Same thing with Jalen Smith. Obviously they just spent the number 10 pick on him, but we're also not sure if he's going to be more of a four or a five at the next level. We don't know if he's going to fit well with Ayton yet. We don't know. You know, with rookies, we just never really know what we're getting until we see them on an NBA floor. I think his best role would probably be as a backup small ball five for now. But, you know, that depends, because it is still a 72-game season. There's a lot of physical toll that comes with that if you're playing as a small ball five for the whole season long. Fortunately, it'd be bench minutes, so it wouldn't be as extensive on him. But I really do think it depends on what we're able to see out of Jalen Smith and Damian Jones, because those are pretty much the only other backup five options right now. Yeah. So I would like to see him in a small ball role, free up Cam Johnson to come off the bench as a four and spread the floor a little bit. But he could very well log minutes off the bench as a four.
Yeah, it's the place where I think the last roster spot is probably going to go here for the Suns. Assuming they keep campaign, they have one roster spot remaining after signing Langston Galloway as well today, which I did not hit on in yesterday's show, but we'll talk about in the next segment more specifically. Just it doesn't bode well for their sort of roster balance the way things are set right now. Not that they can't be effective. I think their second unit offense is looking to be really strong, but defensively in that second unit, unless Jalen Smith makes really big strides, or Šarić just, you know, is surprisingly sort of adequate playing in that five role more often, which I don't think he's terrible. It's just he's obviously not really much of an athlete, so you're relying on sort of the team defense being better than the sum of its parts there if you're going to have Šarić as the five. So, you know, there's guys like Dwayne Dedman left on the open market. JaVale McGee probably not going to stay in Cleveland, so maybe he gets bought out and he's available, or you could try to trade for him. That's probably where I would try to go. I don't know if there's a great option left. They'll be fine with what they have, but they need Saric to play the four as well. So, you know, because they don't really have like a backup four, or they have Bridges, Johnson, and Crowder. I don't know what you want to call any of them, but that's only three players, right? That's only three guys. That's a lot of minutes if they're the only players playing forward for you. So you would think Saric would play next to Ayton a little bit. Maybe you'd see lineups with him and Smith. But I just don't think you feel awesome about how things are sitting right there, and it probably could get a little better, whether that's just Smith getting better in and of itself or adding outside talent. I think they have some things to look at there, but he's a great, Monty loved to call him a connector, and I think that is a pretty perfect descriptor for what he does, and especially when he's just a little bit more aggressive with that shot like he was in the bubble, looking for his own offense, because he has a face-up game. He can knock down open threes. He can post up a little bit here and there. He's a good playmaker, so when he's just a touch more aggressive and looking for his own shot, which I think he will be playing in the second unit, I think he's a really useful player, and they got him at a nice price. So let's dive into a little bit more of the rest of this roster, what that second unit offense could be, and maybe how they make up for some of their weaknesses. Before we do that, though, I want to tell you guys about the sponsor of today's show, which is Built Go. We tell you about Built Bar all the time. Those are the awesome, delicious, protein-packed bars, but Built Bar also makes little gel packets that do a lot of the same stuff for you. Built Go. Built Go makes you the best you at whatever you do. When you're hitting that wall, what's your wall? I mean, like for me, we've all been a little bit lazier, I think, lately, but for me, it is maybe recording this podcast at the very end of an insane free agency weekend and kind of operating a whole month of free agency in the span of 3 days, I could have used the Built Go. And I have not tried it yet, but these things are incredible. I mean, they're 1.5-ounce packages you can put in your briefcase, golf bag, in your pocket, wherever you are. The best workout gel on the market. It's like 5-Hour Energy or a Monster drink, but more natural with a third of the caffeine. And so you don't get that crash. It's not like stocking your body with a bunch of stuff that you don't need and then you regret it later. And there's three delicious flavors on top of it. They don't taste like medicine like some of these things can. It's peanut butter honey, chocolate coconut, or chocolate mint, jam-packed with B3, B6, B12, honey. Like I said, some caffeine, of course, in there. So look, there's also stuff to make you feel and look better as well. This stuff is natural. It's not, like I said, jam-packed with a bunch of nonsense. To take advantage of our offer, you're going to go to builtgo.com and use the promo code LOCKED, L-O-C-K-E-D, and get 20% off that first order. Again, promo code LOCKED at checkout at builtgo.com for 20% off. Alrighty, back here with Gerald Bourget of FanSided. Listen the rest of the week as well, guys. We have a lot of great guests coming. Jared Dubin of 538 and elsewhere. I'm hoping to lock him down. We have Michael Pina of GQ and 538 coming on for Wednesday's show. I might do a mailbag for Thanksgiving. A lot of great stuff coming. We got to start previewing the season already, guys, so do not go anywhere. Along those lines, though, Gerald, we want to iron down a little bit more of what this rotation is going to look like. So since I last spoke with the listeners, the Suns went out and got Etuan Moore, who I talked about a little bit, Langston Galloway. You mentioned Damian Jones to kind of fill out their roster here. Moore and Galloway, to me, are really nice deals. I mean, the fact that they got those guys at the minimum and still have their BAE to use next year to maybe use for buyout guys or just to save the money. I mean, you don't have to use it if you're getting, like, they could have used that on Galloway. That's kind of what I was thinking they might have to do, and they didn't even need to bid anybody out there. So they got him for the minimum, and he's going to play a real role, I think. Moore's going to play a real role. We know they're going to keep Javon Carter campaign. So let's start at those guard spots. I think you have to be really excited that you finally have players to back up Devin Booker for maybe the first time in his career with Carter, Galloway, and Moore all sort of options at that spot.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I said, it's kind of maybe that's part of the reason why I'm having such trouble wrapping my head around this is that there are three different viable options to come off the bench behind Booker between Moore, Carter, and Galloway. And the best part is that all of these guys are good shooters. Like Moore is a career 39% shooter. Javon Carter was one of the Suns' best shooters, if not the best, if I remember correctly. And Galloway has shot the ball well recently. I think he's around 36-37% for his career. And then, of course, there's the fact that Galloway and Moore are kind of combo guards. Like, they could play either spot in a pinch. Javon Carter kind of fits that description, although you don't really want him with the ball in his hands for too long because he'll just pound the air out of the ball. But, and then they've got Payne, who was really good next to Carter in the bubble. It's funny because I tweeted out just a random depth chart of the Suns after they had signed Crowder. I don't even think they had Moore or Galloway yet, but I had a bunch of, it was just to show how much the roster had improved, just give a rough sketch of what the roster looked like. And I had multiple people just like sliding up in the mentions, like, that guy's not going to play here, he's going to play there. And I'm like, this is not the point. Like, these guys can play multiple positions. Exactly. And I think it's going to be something that Monty Williams, there's going to be some trial and error just because he has a lot of good players that can play multiple spots, and he's going to need to figure out which lineups work best, which players are optimized at which spot. I think right now they love Javon Carter. Like, I don't see him getting cut from the rotation just because of what he brings to the table. But it is interesting to see how exactly they're going to go about this, especially because the good news is Paul, he's going to be resting quite a few games this season, I feel like. He typically misses 10 to 15 games a season now anyway, with all of, this truncated off season that we've had. And then the fact that it's a 72-game season and we're kind of just like rushing through it, I feel like there'll be more nights of rest for him, which is, that's when having all these different combo guards is going to be good for them.
But who do you think starts when he does that?
That's a good question, honestly. I don't even know because I'm not 100% confident in Cameron Payne yet. I think based on what we saw in the bubble, if that's the guy the Suns are getting, I think that's the guy that you start. But I'm just not confident committing to that based off an 8-game sample size, I think he has Monty Williams' trust, which is very important. I think Etuan Moore could be another option there just because of his particular skill set. But, I feel like it's going to be a better version of what we saw last year where we had like three or four different guys jostling for that backup point guard spot, except it was kind of tragic to watch most of the time. This time it's going to be a good thing where we're going to have like multiple good players to choose from.
Yeah. It's really interesting because I agree with you that I don't think Payne necessarily showed enough to be a lock even to be that backup guard necessarily. I think, the way they built this roster, it's not unreasonable to think he's not even in it. Like, he could be the odd man out some nights, even though he's, technically sort of the only backup player currently that you think of as a point guard specifically. I think they must really believe in him, though, that at least as somebody who can fight for that roster or that rotation spot, because otherwise they would have gone out and gotten a DJ Augustine or a player like that. So they obviously feel comfortable with Payne heading into next season. John Hollinger and John Gamador both reported Elia Kobo will be waived, so he's not part of this mix. What I guess I'm kind of leaning toward right now as far as my expectations is that because of the way that they've really focused on shooting, which you went over, but just to really like dial it in. Langston Galloway was 40% last year, has a lightning quick release, can make shots of all sorts of ways. I wrote a little bit about his fit a while ago because I think, you see a guy who's just a pure shooter, and obviously we think the Suns probably would be interested, and they sure were. Etuan Moore is like an average or just above average shooter, more of a spot up guy. Like, he's not really like an incredibly versatile 3-point shooter who you're going to run off screens and all that, but he's totally going to knock down an open one if you get it to him. And then Javon Carter, same thing, like you said, he's not a great decision maker, not much of a passer. You want him to be in easy situations where he just catches and shoots. That's pretty much it. And so with that all said, I think you're going to see a lot like we did last year where we saw Rubio and Booker be separated in the rotation a little bit and staggered by Monty Williams. I wouldn't be surprised if you see that with Paul and Booker too, because both guys are the two best playmakers on this team by far, and they have more shooting now, so you can get away with those lineups, but you're still going to need one of those two guys to be on the floor most of the time in my opinion. It gets a little easier with Šarić. It gets, you know, a little bit easier if DeAndre Ayton can turn into more of a playmaker. You'll have some options, but if you want a stereotypical, like, perimeter initiator, it's probably going to be Booker and Paul most of the time. So it'll be a little bit interesting in that way, because we'll see those guys staggered. Obviously, they'll start and close games together, but I think you have some creative stuff to do there. And just the idea of surrounding both of those players with heaps of shooting is obviously pretty exciting, even if they're not on the floor together. But to transition a little bit to the wing and forward spots here, I think the Crowder thing is more intriguing the more I think about it, because of the fact that we don't know. You know, I would think Mikal Bridges probably gets a little stronger again this offseason, but that's never going to quite be the type of player he is. And we still don't know what DeAndre Ayton will be. We know Cam Johnson's not that type of player. So now they have an option. Jay Crowder can do that. He can be the guy you put on a LeBron James or Giannis in those types of matchups. And you're going to be pretty comfortable with that. I think it's going to be exciting if Ayton can be another option there. We've been waiting and waiting for that. But I do think he made some strides that make me think he could be, or at least sort of like a guy you don't mind switching onto a player like that, at the very least. So that's sort of, I think it's going to be a by-committee thing in a lot of different ways, where they're going to have players who can play the 3, 4, and 5. We're going to have matchups where, you know, players are asked to do different things. You could see a lineup or a game in which they need a little bit more offense. Maybe Cam's going to play a little bit more. Maybe you can buy Jalen Smith some minutes against lesser players. But it's not necessarily thin, but it doesn't line up. It doesn't stack up according to like traditional sort of the way we think about positions. What do you make of that group overall, just like 3 through 5?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of, and it's sort of tied into the guard spot, because like you were saying, they need shooting around their two best playmakers. And with the group of wings that the Suns have, you know, they've got Cam Johnson, who's pretty solid on both ends of the floor. They've got Mikal Bridges, who has not shot the ball well through his first two seasons, but showed signs of, you know, his shot finally coming back together again. And then is just a defensive stud. Jay Crowder has been kind of streaky shooting the three ball, but he was pretty good last year. And he was blistering hot through the playoffs until like around the conference finals, and then it just kind of tanked for him. So it's an interesting blend of two-way talent, and I'm having a hard time because like Cam Johnson was, aside from Devin Booker just being that dude and Šarić grounding the second unit, like Cam Johnson was the biggest revelation of the bubble, just the way that the Suns were able to compete, and not only compete, but kind of thrive on both ends of the floor with him playing alongside Mikal Bridges.
And like, playing a ton. He played a ton in the bubble. Like more minutes. He led the team in minutes a lot of games.
Right. And he was very good. Like he looked ready. It was a completely different player than the one that we saw during the regular season for the most part. Like that shooting that he brought was huge. And he was just very competent. You know, he didn't make a ton of mistakes. He was just very good on both ends of the floor. So, you know, bringing in Crowder, obviously that's a great get, just for the fact that you have this super strong guy who can guard multiple spots, who's a veteran, who's established 3-and-D type player. Like that's huge. But I am interested to see how it impacts Cam Johnson, because he's, you know, he's the most obvious candidate to get cut from the starting rotation now, you know, heading into a season where Oubre is obviously gone. They brought in Crowder. You know, I'm thinking it's Bridges and Crowder, and then you play Cam Johnson, you know, 3 if Šarić is at your 4, or you play him at the 4 if Šarić is at the 5 coming off that bench. But, you know, either way, that's a good blend of two-way competence. You know, Šarić, if he's at the 5, he's going to get out-muscled, you know, just not be as athletic or tall as some of these guys. But positionally, he's a pretty smart player. And he got really strong for the bubble too. Like he was he was a brick house down there in the paint. So it's an interesting thing to see where these wings are going to go. And that's not even talking about like a guard, like, Etuan Moore. I looked this up. He has a 6'9" wingspan.
He was the starting 3 for most of the AD Drew era Pelicans. Like he played the 3 for, I mean, he was overmatched. He wasn't really a good fit there, but they at least could trust him. He's a sturdy defender. He's one of those guys that just gets to the right spots, like, you know, uses that length well, is pretty strong for his size. I mean, he's only like 6'3", 6'4", but he's pretty strong. So, yeah, I think you could see lineups where it's Booker and two guys smaller than him sort of kind of mixing in that 1-3, because you could see Carter defending some threes. The thing is, it's not as much of a problem on the bench because guys, you know, coaches don't put out like typical 1-5 lineups for bench units. You know, you have like a Clippers team where they have like Lou Williams and Patrick Beverley out there and, you know, Landry Shamet. Like that's kind of like the 1-3 or, you know, something like that. So it's not, you don't need that huge size on your bench the way you want to have it in the front or in the starting group. So I agree with you. I think it'll be Crowder at the four starting. I think that just makes the most sense. I don't think they went into last season thinking Cam would start, and I don't think it's like an insult to him to have him come be like a 25-minute a night bench piece by any means. But I think you could see Booker playing the three sometimes. Like I said, you could see Sarge playing the four. It's going to be a really interchangeable group, I think, positionally, just as it is in terms of I don't think there will be like – there's some teams that very much have their starting 1-5 and then their backup 1-5. I do not think the Suns team will be like that. I think you'll see a lot of mixing and matching. But all of that brings me back to how I think it's going to be a massive season for Mikal Bridges because they're going to need him – I talked about this a little bit when the Paul stuff first came out, which is that part of the reason that he was so successful last year is because he could switch and play team defense and rotate and create steals, play the passing lanes, all those things that we know Chris Paul can do, but he didn't have to. One of the main things that he didn't have to do there that he has in the past is defend opposing playmakers. They had Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, they had Lou Dort, they had even Dennis Schroeder to do that. I mean, you never saw Chris Paul defending James Harden in that playoff series, even though he's probably like skill-wise the Thunder's best defensive player, depending on how you feel about Shai or Dort. But I don't think that the Suns will want him to do that either. And so Mikal Bridges to me is the obvious guy who's going to be doing that if it's a perimeter type of a player like, you know, a De'Aaron Fox or whoever you want to go through, Ja Morant. I think you'll see Mikal be that guy a lot, especially now that Crowder can take some of the bigger players, you know. So I think Bridges is going to have to play a ton of minutes because of the thinness on the wing, and I think he's going to have an incredible responsibility on a nightly basis to do some of that stuff. And by the way, also, could you keep doing the bubble three-point shooting? Because they just can't afford to have him be a liability from back there. So a lot is on his plate. And I don't think there's a better guy you could think of to try to hope for the best with, because we know he's going to work hard and we know he's going to sacrifice. He's not going to be trying to get points and do any nonsense that's not in the name of winning. So can't think of a better guy to ask all that of, but that doesn't mean it's easy. And so year three will be very, very big for Mikal Bridges. Let's close the show out, guys, with a little bit of a conversation about where the Suns stack up, because I do think it's worth considering. Roster's pretty much locked in, although I don't know what's going on in Houston, but we'll do that right after this. All right, closing out the show here, let's just quickly, because again, Houston is an unknown, and I think there's still a little bit that could change, and we don't know how these teams will actually look. We know the paper, we know the rotation, we know the lineup, but I don't know for sure how Christian Wood's going to look in Houston, for example. I don't know how badly it's going to hurt Denver to lose Jeremy Grant. But the way that I see it right now, and Gerald, you've been sacrificed to the trade grade gods this offseason, which is commendable work, but I think it makes you a good person to go through this with because you have kept track of every move across the league here. But I see I don't want to lose anybody, so I'm going to go to the last year's standings. But I see the Lakers and the Clippers, of course, as locks. I see the Denver Nuggets as a lock for the playoffs. I personally see the Dallas Mavericks as a lock for the playoffs. And I sort of feel like the Trailblazers, I just really like what they did. And when you have Damian Lillard, it's sort of just, you have to really screw things up like they did last year to put a Dame team on the ropes of the playoffs. So I think, assuming they're healthier and they added a lot of well-fitting talent, I would have Portland there as well. So that's, I think I just said five or six teams. Do you have different teams as locks? Do you have additional teams to that? Did I say somebody that you don't think is a lock? Where do you stand on sort of that top tier of no-brainers for the West?
Yeah, I mean, mine's pretty similar. I would say Lakers and Clippers, obviously. I would probably throw the Nuggets in there. I don't like that they lost Jeremy Grant and that Paul Millsap is now, you know, that they have to start Paul Millsap there again without Grant behind him. But I'd still probably throw them in there as a lock. Mavericks, I think, are only going to get better from here. And I like some of the things they did, like Josh Richardson. And then the Blazers as well. The Blazers, you know, getting Robert Covington is huge. They've made a lot of good depth moves too. And I'd also throw the Warriors in there too, just because they're like right on the lock cusp for me, because I think if Steph stays healthy again, just that trio of Steph, Draymond, and Kelly Oubre is good enough to outweigh some of these other teams. But
let me ask you this. Do you think the Suns are in that group?
I do, actually. Do you think
they're like a sure thing? I kind of do, too.
Yeah, it's weird to say. I think they're a sure thing. They just have – they have actual NBA players. It's gnarly. Like, I'm not used to this. Yeah. And they have a top – they have two top 20 players between Chris Paul and Devin Booker, which hasn't been a thing since Nash and Amari. So that's kind of nice. Yeah.
Yeah, I think I agree. I mean, you're looking at like Langston Galloway or Etuan Moore potentially not being in your rotation, or Cameron Payne not being in your rotation, who was just like a seventh, eighth man for you in the bubble. It just seems like whether some of those problems come to bear or not, they just have too much talent. I mean, I think their offense is going to be like top 10. And it's just hard, like you said, to imagine a team with a top 10 offense, a little, you know, an improving defense, let's say it's middle of the pack or, you know, 15 to 20 even, with two top 10 guys or two top 20 guys who can close games for you and just limit, they're not going to make mistakes, you know? I just have a hard time believing that team in the regular season isn't as close to a lock as I think I would feel comfortable saying for a team that has not made the playoffs in 10 years. Like, you almost have to like knock on wood or do some sort of like sacrifice to the basketball gods if you say something like that. But I just, you know, you're talking about like, I think Dallas is, I just think Luka's very much nearing that Dame thing I just said of it's almost impossible to imagine Luka and a healthy roster that makes sense around him not making the playoffs. But like, I kind of think the Suns might be better than the Jazz. You know, I think the Suns could be better than the Mavericks. I don't know if I would say that. Denver got worse, I think, almost definitively. If the Suns finished ahead of Denver, I don't think that would be a shock, you know. You know, and let's also throw in there, like, if James Harden does stay on the Rockets, I do think that Christian Wood signing is pretty interesting as a partner for him in the pick and roll and pick and pop game and all that. And they didn't lose too many of the rest of their players. They lost like Austin Rivers and players like that, but not too big. You know, they still have PJ Tucker, Daniel House, Eric Gordon. So they'll be a playoff team if Harden's there. I mean, he's a playoff team unto himself. He's a top five offense unto himself. So it's going to be competitive. Obviously, we know there's 10 spots now. How important do you think it is, though, for the Suns to avoid being in the play-in game, or just any team? I mean, it seems like, yes, that's a nice opportunity for the 9 and 10, but I think if you have a chance to get from 7 to 6 and avoid that, you really want to.
Oh, absolutely. I can think of no Suns outcome that's more Sunsy than them being in like the 7 or 8 spot and somehow losing in the play-in games and not making it to the playoffs because the NBA decided to implement this play-in game thing now. Like, I think you definitely want to aim for that 4 seed, that 5 seed, 6 seed. You know, you don't want to get greedy, because we've got to keep in mind, like, as much as the roster has improved, it still took an 8-0 stretch for this team to finish 5 games under 500. So, like, the young guys, this is going to be a learning process for them. This is a gut check season for DeAndre Ayton. Like, Chris Paul is not going to put up with immaturity like that, or just a lack of focus, even with as much as Ayton improved defensively last year. So this is going to be one of those seasons where bad habits have to get stomped out. And I think they will be. I think this team is just too good, like we've been saying, to not make the playoffs. But the quicker that focus comes into view, the quicker these new pieces kind of all assemble together, the better, because the West is super competitive. A lot of teams got better this offseason, and you don't want to be playing around with that play-in spot. You don't want to be in a position where, you know, down the stretch, you're not comfortable with where you're sitting at. So especially for a team that hasn't been to the playoffs in 10 years, like you wanted all of that to come together as quickly as possible. So yeah, you don't want any part of that play-in spot at all.
Yeah. I think that, I mean, I would think by then, I don't even want to like get into it, but I would think that by then you could probably be starting to talk about having fans in the building by the playoffs next year, which is a whole separate can of worms. But I do think it's one of the things that's getting a little bit overlooked in terms of this sky is falling NBA finances narrative, is that the season's long. What's happening now is not what will be happening by June and July of next year. And if you pay attention to the news, things seem like they'll be a lot better by then. Not a topic for about the Suns making the playoffs, a much bigger topic, but it is a little bit silly. My point is, I think you would be looking at a potential real type of a home game where you have some people in the building cheering for you by June or July of next year. And I guess it would be June if we're talking about the play-in game. So at the very least, you definitely don't want to be 9 and 10 in those spots, because the league has done a good job of still making the 7 and 8 seed are firmly favorites in those situations. You have to lose twice and you get to play the games at home. So it would be pretty embarrassing to lose those. You definitely don't want to be on the outside looking in, as we saw with Memphis this year. So I agree. I would say I think the Suns will be better than the Warriors. I think the Suns will be probably in contention for that middle of the road in the West, just like Oklahoma City was. But when I talked about, you know, not making mistakes, and I think that's a lot of what Paul will bring, similar to what Rubio brought, it'll just be another tier up. I think that really is where I land with some of this playoff stuff as well, and how they'll perform in late games situations, and just dealing with the added pressure of everybody in the league is going to pick them to make the playoffs. And that brings with it its own sort of tenseness. It can, at least. And so I think that's another area where Paul will help, is that he's not going to be worried about that. And neither will Jay Crowder, for that matter. Jay Crowder has played in the playoffs almost every single year of his career. So I think so much about that stretch of a couple games last February when they won some games coming out of the All-Star break, and it was like, okay, maybe this thing isn't over, right? Maybe this season could have something to it and the Suns might have a run to make here. And then they come and just drop complete duds to Detroit and Golden State, which is about the two of the five worst teams in the league, especially by that point in the year with no Steph and everything. So I don't think that happens this year, or it shouldn't. If it does, it's a really big sign of even bigger issues on the part of some of the younger players on the roster. But I just don't see a Chris Paul, Devin Booker team with this much depth and the potential this team has on offense just sort of imploding the way that team did at that point in the season. So that's sort of where I kind of land, is that you build in that to the fact that they just have the talent to also be in the mix there. And I just have a hard time seeing how they don't make it. And I honestly really do think they'll be in that contention for 4, 5, 6. You know, I saw somebody today said they could be as high as a 3. I don't think that's like outrageous. I think they at least have the talent on their own part to make that a possibility. So it all is very, very weird to talk about. I saw people on Twitter talking about buyout players and the fact that they might want to come to the Suns. It's all very weird. We're going to have to get used to acting like we've been here before and speaking with the confidence of people who cover and follow a good team, but it is very uncomfortable for me. All right, you can follow his work at FanSided. You can follow him. We don't, maybe shouldn't talk about Twitter right now, but at Borgay Gerald, assuming he gets his old Twitter account at some point, maybe we can update it the next time he comes on the show. But thanks as always for coming on, Gerald. I look forward to covering the season with you, man.
Absolutely, Brendan. Hopefully soon we'll be able to cover it in person together too.
We sure hope so.
Safely, of course.
Safely, yeah, and of course, but yeah, remains to be seen what that will look like. I hope you guys will take that journey with us. It should be an incredibly fun season,
And we'll be back tomorrow, guys. Have a good one.